How did you get on with the hammock?
Get on with?
The hammock.
I liked it. It was quite a change from the bed, the top bunk. And yes, while the ship was rolling and it was pitching, because the whole convoy was travelling at a very slow rate. There was a hull of a battleship in the middle of the convoy, and I rather think that this was the Warspite, which had been in action over in Italy and had burnt out the superstructure. But it was still floating, but it hadn't got any engine power, and so therefore there was two tugs attached to it, one both of them at the front, but sort of like a V-piece. And the whole convoy was governed by the rate of their motion. Now, at that, the whole of the journey was the Atlantic rollers were causing both the Warspite, I think, or the battleship, whatever it was, the hull to be rolling very drastically. And our ship, SS New Aurelia, was pitching, and what would happen is that you'd find that the nose would go down into a deep swell, and it would literally stand on its nose. The back end of the ship would come out of the water, and the propeller would be thrashing air, and you could hear this, and the vibrations was quite something. And then, of course, what would happen is that the ship would rock back again. The propellers would then get into the water. They'd get full power, and it would do like a little leapfrog, ready to go into the next oncoming wave. And so we did like a leapfrog sailing for the whole of the journey, until we got more or less into port. The journey took 14 days, and it went out towards North Africa, and it was, as we were passing close towards the land, you could actually smell it, and this was a pleasant smell to me. But after dark, then the convoy had turned out in towards the North Atlantic, and I think it must have gone out on a very wide, like a U journey.
What was the smell of North Africa like then? What could you
recognize? It was foreign to me, insomuch that it smelt partly earthly and partly sort of food and things like that.
What was the food like on the New Aurelia?
It was relatively good, but because of this severe pitching, not so much the roll, but the pitching of the New Aurelia, then it wasn't long, in 24 hours after when we turned out to the North Atlantic, that most of them were sick. And I'm talking about our own crew, I don't know about the others. And so you found that very few were turning up towards breakfast.
Were you affected by seasickness?
No, I've got a... I wasn't seasick at any time. And that's both flight and on the water. Two main things come out of this trip was that the entertainment was Lotto, or Housey, whatever you like to call it, but I think they called it Lotto at that time, and that used to be carrying at the in the space at the stern. Now, that was all day long. I didn't join because I didn't like it, but I would get in towards the middle of the ship, and I would be standing and counteracting the movement of the ship. So I was using my sea legs, and that was, to me, more worthwhile than sit or trying to sit doing lotto. The other part is that each night the Italians went into song, and you got choral, you got mass singing, and you got individuals. And I've never appreciated how good they were at singing up to that point. And it was, I spent a lot of time listening to their music, and Solo Mio and Mamma Mamma sang the same songs every night, so I got a flavour for the Italian music, and I've still got it. I like it now, along with the Spanish music.
Did they have any musical instruments, or were they just singing?
No, purely? Just singing. Mm. No, one or two would take a solo, and they were very good, no doubt about it.
How many ships were there in the convoy on this voyage?
Hard to say, because they were to the horizon. Oh. And they'd been assembled in Gibraltar Bay, some of them, and then we met, I think, some more outside of the bay. And it was really vast.
Did you have air cover overhead when you...
No.
And you mentioned there were destroyers escorting the convoy.
Yes.
Did you have any alarms for enemy aircraft or for submarines?
There was the one case where I think it was a test more than anything. The alarms went, and of course the understanding was that we all went below deck as quick as we could. And then of course there was the lifeboat test. And the lifeboat test was, I think I've already mentioned, I was given a rifle and 5 rounds and told to guard one of the lifeboats with that was going to be full of the Italians. Mm-hmm. And I felt it was rather fruitless, personally. Mm-hmm. There was alarms, mm-hmm. but I never heard anything to go. Never heard the explosions at all, if there were any. But you could certainly see, just once in a while, the destroyers or whatever it was travelling at speed, whereas we would be travelling at virtually hardly moving.
So they'd be going to investigate something, presumably.
Maybe so, yes.
And you mentioned eventually you made landfall off Northern Ireland.
Can I just mention one thing? This is humorous. And that was the... I was put on to look after the breakfasts. And the catering was like an all-metal shelf. And that particular morning it was kippers, and there weren't many down for it, but nevertheless there was enough to keep us busy, and I was one that was busy. Now, because this all metal plate was radiating considerable amount of heat, I took off my tunic. I was in my best blue. We'd changed to best blue, and I'd rolled up my tunic and put it at the end of the where we were serving, in a little cubbyhole. Now, when it come to pack up, when I got my tunic, all the others had been using it to clean their hands.
What was just wiping their hands on it?
Wiping their hands, and kippers on tunics don't go very well. And when I got back to Britain, then I washed that tunic in petrol, I washed it in water, and I couldn't get rid of it. And if I was in a warm room afterwards, you could smell kippers. And so, if you went to visit anybody and you could see, wonder what's going on. And I knew, but I never divulged what was happening. So that was a bit of fun at my expense, I think.
And what were your feelings then when you saw Ireland? Because you said you had landed
Northern
Ireland.
after the long spell of barren land, and to see the different greens of, I think it's the River Clyde, that came in, and that there was rising hills on either side. I've only been there once, and that was at that time, and it was wonderful, and I thought, now, I never appreciated such range of colours that we have in this country. And when they talk about green and pleasant land, that puts it in a nutshell. Yes, it really was. It was a wonderful, wonderful sight. And even to see some of the cliffs, the stones and things like that, range of colours of stones, I've never experienced anything quite like that. And it was a time when everything was in good colour.
And what happened to you next then? You arrived in the Clyde and docked at...
Yes, Greenock.
Greenock.
Not Greenock, yeah.
Greenock.
Greenock, that's yes. It. I knew it was something like that.
Yeah.
Well, we weren't hanging around. We just simply put on board trains and a train, and we were taken to... I think it was Prydainc.
What sort of place was Prydainc?
Ah, well, this is the place where I first met up with the WAFs. I wasn't there very long, and I think it was at the period of time that my flip-over diary got lost, but I think that was the main part in that. But going back to Prydainc, it was a very nice airfield, and it's on the Lizard area, and I was able to get a bicycle, and so therefore I was able to ride from there to different places, and I remember particularly Kynan's Cove. There was the... lovely beach and rocks on the beach, very attractive. And I also went to the other side of the Lizard Peninsula, and that was where I met up with two drunk WAFs, and they were more or less carrying a drunken air crew between them. I was on my bike and it's dark, well, nearly dark, it's getting late. And as I was walking along this cliff edge, it was a lovely evening, these three came up towards me and they stopped. I pulled my bike into one side so as to let them go, and they stopped. And she says, "Are you coming with us?" I said, "No, I'm going back to the camp." "Go on, come on." "Oh, no." She says, "Don't you want to love me?" "No." And... I says, "You've got two fellas there with you." She says, "They're no good." She says, "Don't you want to love me?" I said, "No." I said, "You're drunk as well." And I left it at that. And the reason why I was wanting to get away was that I had no lights on my bike, and I wasn't sure which way to go either. So I wanted a bit of daylight to get back to camp. But it was quite an evening, was that one. And it was very lovely country area. And another thing that happened was that I was in the hangar at the time. I forget what I was doing, but I know I'd been bending down for quite a while, and I suddenly straightened up, and I sort of brought my shoulders back and put my arms out. Next moment I felt a woman's breast. There was a scream went out, and and all our colleagues came to her rescue. I had no explanation at all, because it was an accident, but the thing was that I was ostracised, and also the whole of the squadron was ostracised, because all the girls had been told it would be all rampant, and therefore we had to be avoided at all costs. So yes, there was WAFs there, but they stayed clear of us. Mind you, we were thoroughly sunburnt and looked, I should think, at our best. My hair had bleached to a blonde. So, anyway...